Fierce Athlete Podcast.
We are female athletes being raw and real about the joys and struggles of life, both on and off the field.
We share how faith can both heal our wounds and reveal true beauty.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Fierce Athlete Podcast. My name is Sam Kelly, and we have a special edition podcast for you today. You know, one of the reasons, as a lot of you know, that I started Fierce was to talk about the hard issues. And today we're going to talk about the battle for women's sports. We're going to talk about women being forced to compete against biological males who are identifying as transgender. And I can think of no one more suited to address this issue with me than Riley Gaines. Riley, welcome to the podcast.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for having me on. It's a breath of fresh air to be able to talk to another female athlete. I'm sure a lot of the listeners are female athletes. So this is like my cup of tea. I love it. So thank you.
Absolutely. Now, Riley, you know, obviously you're not of your choosing, but you're most famous for having to compete against Leah or Will Thomas in the NCAAs in 2022. But before we get there, you know, I want to talk about your athletic career. You're a 12-time All-American, 5-time SEC title holder. You hold an SEC record. Something that I was most impressed with is that you were the 2022 SEC Scholar Athlete of the Year, maintaining almost a 3.9 GPA. So, you know, obviously you've competed at the highest level. You've done well academically. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how did you achieve such success? Why swimming? And how did you end up having such a great career at the University of Kentucky?
Absolutely. So I started swimming when I was 4 years old. I graduated when I was 22. So I dedicated 18 years of my life to my sport, which of course includes, you know, your sport specific training. So swimming, those practices, but it also includes your weight lifting. It also includes your diet and your sleep schedule and your physical rehabilitation. It's impossible to put into words the amount of sacrifices that you have to make. You don't get to go to prom. You don't get to have sleepovers on the night with your friends because guess what? You have practice at 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. You don't get to go on vacation with your family when the rest of them go because you can't miss practice that long. The list goes on. When you're in college, you don't get to come home for summer or come home for Christmas or come home for Thanksgiving. You're there all year long, especially at that level. We were practicing 6 hours every single day, swimming nearly 10 miles every day. So to say it's a lifelong journey is an understatement. There's so much work that goes into it, but not just for myself either. I have an amazing support system in and of my family. Of course, they made investments as well. Not just with their time, but it's a financial investment, an emotional investment. I'm so blessed to have such an amazing family who cared so much for my sport. And so ultimately, it became the time for me to choose colleges, and it was the University of Kentucky. And I love how you mentioned the academic piece as well, because that is something that's really important to me. I knew I wanted to excel in my sport, but I strive to be a well-rounded individual. And so at the University of Kentucky, I love the resources that they had in academics in terms of community service. I was also the SEC Community Service Leader of the Year, which is something I'm still passionate about. I'm the Special Olympics swim team coach. So all of these things, the resources they had there, I really just couldn't have had a better experience, of course, until that last swim meet where which is, of course, what you've been referring to, where we had to compete as women against a male. But my experience at University of Kentucky was amazing.
That's beautiful. And yeah, let's shift to that. You know, you had such a tremendous career, and you know, the pinnacle of it is the NCAA championships. You find yourself there and find out, I mean, you knew it beforehand, learned that you would have to compete against a biological male. Walk us through, you know, what went on there, what went on psychologically, what went on with your faith, you know, how you felt throughout that whole process.
Yeah, no, it was really, I think, the best word for it. There's a lot of words that could be used to describe it. At first, it was almost the sense of intriguement, but really, after watching Leah Thomas swim to a national title, it was heartbreak. it felt like I'd been punched in the stomach. It felt like betrayal. It felt like, of course, belittlement. And to kind of briefly touch on the locker room, that in and of itself was so awkward and embarrassing and uncomfortable and truly traumatic, I think is the best word for it. So there's a lot of words that could describe how not just I felt, how every single girl at that meet felt. It was obvious just based off of the extreme discomfort in the locker room. It was obvious based off of the tears that I saw from these girls who missed out on being an All-American, these ninth and 17th place finishers who weren't able to advance. So when I'm talking to you and when I've been doing what I've been doing for this past year, over a year now, I'm not just speaking for myself. And I think that's a common misconception is that, you know, people continually hear me, they see me, but it's so much bigger than just me. And so that first day of competition, as you mentioned, we knew we would be competing against Leah Thomas, but we had no idea what this was going to look like. And so that first day, this was not an event that I competed in. Leah swam prelims and qualified top eight, come back that night and beat every girl in the country. These are American record holders. These are the most impressive female swimmers this country has ever seen. Thomas took them down with ease, of course. And I want to mention, this was a male who swam 3 years at University of Pennsylvania and ranked 462nd at best among the men. So again, now dominating every girl in the country. So that next day of competition was the 200 freestyle, which was the event that Thomas and I raced in. And ultimately, it resulted in a tie. We went the exact same time down to the 100th of a second. So we get out of the water. We go behind the awards podium where the NCAA official looks at both Thomas and myself and says, "Great, I bet you guys tied. We only have one trophy. So we're going to give this trophy to Leah. Riley, you have to go home empty-handed." And so when I questioned this, I was so taken aback. I said, "Okay, why? Why are you adamant on giving this trophy to Thomas?" They responded back to me, "Well, Leah has to have the trophy for pictures. So you can pose with this one, but you have to give it back. You go home empty-handed and Thomas takes the trophy. End of story." And that's ultimately what thrusted me over the edge. Because of course, at this point, I knew the competition, the unfair competition was wrong. And I knew the locker room was wrong. And I knew the silencing that we dealt with was wrong. But when they reduced everything that myself and my teammates and my competitors had worked our entire lives for down to a photo op to validate the feelings and the identity of a male at the expense of our own, that's when I was no longer willing to lie.
Yeah. You know, my response for a long time was just rage. You know, rage at the injustice of that, the injustice of the whole thing. Similar to you, I've been in touch with some of the UPenn swimmers. So Thomas's teammates and just how uncomfortable and the situations they were put in, you know, almost the indoctrination that they were put under, you know, and, you know, to go from that experience of, you know, this is a personal like attack against me and against these other swimmers. How did you make that jump to then actually becoming a political activist in this issue? Speaking, testifying before Congress, you know, having the courage to call out other female athletes, which is a bone I want to pick with them as well. You know, how did that jump happen? Like how do you even possess the courage to do that?
It's so interesting because after this whole scenario, especially with the trophy, I called my athletic director at the University of Kentucky. Him and I had a close relationship before all of this. And so I called him and I told him what happened. I told him how we felt. I say we, I meant all of us girls at the University of Kentucky and my team. I was team captain of 40 girls. So this is how we all felt. And I told him this is what happened. This is how we feel. How do you feel if I take a public stance? And he just said, "Riley, speak your heart." He said, "I always want you to stay true to your convictions and just know we're behind you. I love you. Don't worry about painting this university in a bad light." And so I thought nothing of it. And that's when I initially did a Daily Wire interview, which quickly turned into Fox and then CPAC and everything else. That all happened very quickly. But honestly, I got to the point where I felt as if I was whining. I was doing so much talking about it, which was great because I was shedding light on the story. But that's when I started at the time on my own dime, flying to these different states, testifying, getting myself in front of anyone who would listen to me, to the point where we couldn't be ignored anymore, because for so long, that's what they wanted to do, was just ignore us or say it's not really happening, or you know, it's just women's sports. It's fine. It's not a big deal. They're not that competitive. It's not, don't worry about it. And what I've realized this past year, traveling to these states, I've probably traveled to 25 or so states and talked about this. I've done it at the federal level. Biden administration is doing to Title IX right now, which is absolutely throwing it out of the window. And what I've realized in putting myself in front of these people is they can't look me in the eyes and say what they've been saying behind these screens and behind these guidelines that they've been putting forward. They can't. It's so easy for them when they don't have to look someone in the eyes and tell them that they actually don't matter, that my privacy isn't important, my safety is not important, my feelings, my dignity, my opportunities, those don't matter. They can't look me in the eyes and say that. Yet what we're seeing across the board, and again, I hate that this issue has become political in the way that it has. I feel like sports is the one thing that should never be politicized. But of course, legislation is the way to fix this. And so, along with a few other measures, such as boycotting, I think that would be effective at this point. Sure. But what we're seeing across the board is this fall entirely on party lines, which is mind-blowing to me that we have one party who isn't typically known for protecting and upholding and respecting women, and one party who prides themselves on feminism, who now aren't fighting for women's sex-based protections. It's really almost the dichotomy is almost ironic. It's almost comical in this weird South Park episode, Babylon Bee kind of satire, but it's what's happening.
Yeah, you know, and to your last point, right, the ideologies that have been pushed and been in the works for a long time are coming to a head. And, you know, I've been, you know, doing this Mission of Fears for about 7 years now, and we talk a lot about femininity, identity, sexuality, you know, all of these issues. And I started it way before this whole trans wave, you know, but I saw the wave coming about 4 years ago. I just saw the bubblings. And even I couldn't have imagined where this would have ended up, right? In my heart, I hoped, and I think it has in some regards, but I hoped that sport would be a natural end. Because sport is actually forcing people to realize that there are differences between men and women.
No doubt. And, this is the most obvious realm of this.
Right. It's speaking to totally. That, like, why, you know, why is it unfair? I mean, our listeners should know this, but again, yeah. We want to equip them because, you know, they're talking to their friends, they're talking to other athletes, they're, you know, they're on the ground. You know, why is it unfair that men compete against women?
Totally. Well, first of all, to highlight something here that perfectly displays this is why are we only seeing men be dominant in women's divisions? This isn't going both ways. One thing I want to mention is at that same national championships where we had Leah Thomas, who is, of course, male transitioning to woman, we had another trans athlete who was a female transitioning to a man, but of course, competing with the women. Fully identified, went by he, him, goes by the name Isaac, swam only in a Speedo, fully aligned with identifying as a man, yet competed with the women, which perfectly shows how the women are at jeopardy here. When a male is competing against a woman, they can actively give their second best and still do better than how they would do in the men's category. And that's what my whole argument is that it's unfair. It's not... My argument's not rooted in hate. It's not rooted in any sort of phobia towards one kind of person or this deep hatred in my heart. That's not what this argument is. My whole argument is that it's unfair and it's infringing on our rights as women. And so for a little perspective here, first of all, of course, we know men are taller. We know men are more powerful. They can jump higher. They're stronger than women. But even something as silly as men on average have a 40% larger throat than women, which doesn't sound like a big deal. But when you're playing a sport such as swimming, where you're grasping for air, that 40% larger throat plays a huge difference. And we're talking about a sport where, again, I dedicated 18 years of my life, especially those years in college, 4 years working so incredibly hard to merely shave off hundredths of a second. It's not like you have these big time drops. So when you're competing next to someone who has, on average, a 10 to 12% performance gap, it's the margin is too large to overcome. And we often hear the argument of, okay, well, these males, they can take hormone suppressants and it can be equivalent. No, it can't. We cannot mitigate male advantage, regardless of how many years you're on hormone suppressants. And our case with Leah Thomas, first of all, it was only 12 months, which is not anywhere near enough. But even if we could mitigate male advantage, there are certain things that will never be diminished. Of course, we talked about height, limb size, hand size, foot size, but also your lung size, the size of your heart, again, the size of your throat. There are so many little things that just the advantages will never be diminished. And I think it's crucial that people realize that. And again, this is only going one way. That Isaac swimmer who I mentioned, who is the female who is now competing, or who now identifies as a man, who competed with the woman, finished top five in the country as a woman, now is competing with the men, finishes dead last every single time. As the top five All-American swimmer in the country as a woman, dead last now as a man.
Yeah, and I think too, like, you know, we have to, and we're at Fierce, we're approaching this from a kind of a Christian worldview, but even a secular person is gonna recognize the body soul union of the person, right? So whether you call it the soul or some, I have in this internal being, right? This internal sense of self, you know, we believe that God designed us as a body soul union. You know, and
no doubt.
And this isn't, you know, I spent a lot of time talking with young women on this issue. And I was speaking with to a group of middle school girls where this confusion surrounding transgenderism is up 5,000%.
Wow.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of confusion. And I just said to them, I said, and I never thought I'd have to say this, but I said, God did not make a mistake when he made you a woman.
No.
And the fact that you were created a woman makes you feminine in your whole being. You almost can't deny it. Like, no. You are feminine and you are good. And, you know, because they're our listeners everywhere, they're hearing, I have to choose. I have to. And it's like, I just wanted to negate the confusion. And it was so beautiful to kind of see them sit back, relax, and like smile.
Totally.
You know, just to have the courage to know who they are and that being a woman is incredible.
Absolutely. And that's what this whole issue is. It's people looking for an identity, which, like you said, we're at an all-time high, exponential, of this group who can't seem to find their identity. And they're looking for other things. There are these men who want to identify as women or whatever that might be. But the only way you will be satisfied is by putting your identity in Christ before anything. And that's something I've realized this past year. I've always been spiritual, but this past year I've been spiritually awakened to, of course, how our God works, but also just how much our, and how well, I should say, our devil works. The devil, Satan. I mean, he's so alive and it's so obvious. But I love what you said. Our God, he doesn't make mistakes. He created a man and woman, and that's it. And so to put your identity in him before anything else, that's how you get that satisfactory feeling. That's how you know you're content. And I wish more people could be introduced to that. But that's why someone such as yourself starting this, getting your message out, you're helping in that, which is huge. And so I couldn't be more grateful for you. Really putting these issues forward and talking about this and a slew of other things with women in particular, it's really powerful.
Yeah, thank you. And I think similar to you, Riley, it's like I can't help but, you know, like I saw as a female athlete, as a mentor to female athletes, I saw all the issues. And it's like I needed to do something because, as you said, and we don't like to hear this, but the devil's real. And yeah. Men and woman and the family is our greatest icon we have of the Trinity, like man, woman, child, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And so, of course, the devil is going to attack the family, but particularly he's going to attack woman because woman is life-giving. He's going to attack our femininity. He's going to try to completely distort it. You know, it's just another trick in his book. So, but that is why we have to stand up, you know. And I was recently talking to a 15-year-old kind of stud basketball player. And we were talking about this. I mean, as you know, this is this whole trans thing is a big topic amongst female athletes in our conversations. And she brought it up, and, you know, and so I'm talking to her about it, and she said, you know, it makes me feel like I don't matter. And I'm like, one, that's the devil, but two, that is the exact opposite of what sport should be doing for a woman.
What
advice do you have to our listeners, to young female athletes who are seeing this battle? I mean, I think taking a lot of hope in seeing you fight, but what advice do you have for them?
That breaks my heart to hear. Just as you said, because I know I mentioned finding my identity in Christ, which is a huge part of me, but I found a large portion of my identity in my sport. It's what made me feel like me. It really did. It's what gave me so many characteristics that I have now. It's given me, playing sports has given me the leadership to do exactly what I'm doing, the confidence to take the arrows that I've been taking, the security to do that as well. And I really do accredit that to sports. And so to hear someone who has so much potential, as you mentioned, to say that it makes them feel like they don't matter, that's the message they want to send. But that's the message that we can't let get through, because that's how we've gotten here. I receive messages daily from parents, from female athletes, from coaches, from medical professionals, from even male athletes, who remind me first and foremost that my story is not unique. They know someone, or that's happening to their daughter, or it's happening from this person who's reaching out to me themselves. And they convey the message to me that they feel so discouraged and they don't want to play their sport anymore. And again, when I hear that, we can't let that happen. We can't let this message be sent. We can't let, you know, this discouragement take over to where you ultimately lose your passion for your sport and ultimately quit. That's what they want to happen. We cannot compromise here. We have to stand firm. We have to be bold, stand firm, not only in, of course, biological reality and objective truth, but in biblical truth. It saddens me so much. But what I've realized this past year is that courage begets courage. And so this athlete you're talking to, if she were to stand firm, continue playing her sport with all of her ability, have this conversation with the people that needs to hear this, others would stand alongside her. I've realized that I have an army of women and men and parents and all kinds of people standing alongside me, which has been the greatest realization, is that you're not alone in feeling like this. The overwhelming majority of people, regardless of political affiliation, regardless of where you live in the country, where you live in the world, the overwhelming majority of people know that this whole allowing men to compete in women's sports is insane. They know this. They know that the women's sporting category was created to honor and uphold and celebrate women. And we're letting that get out of sight. And so my message for people who are discouraged, I know it's easier said than done, but we can't let it discourage us. Use it to your advantage, which is what I've done. Don't look at yourself as some sort of victim, but be optimistic about this situation. Be someone who can contribute in a positive way. It's so important. And my message to parents, which I think parents need to hear this, unfortunately, is to defend your daughters and teach your sons masculinity. We've gotten so far. I think this issue very easily gets centered around women and girls, and of course, but this issue shouldn't be only theirs to handle. We need men to boycott their sports. We need men to be willing to protect and defend women as well. So I think it's crucial. We've deemed masculinity as toxic or bad, but it's not. It's needed. Mm-hmm. There's the saying, and it's hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times. And I think, and of course, it then repeats. And I think we're in this process of weak men creating hard times, which we can only hope these hard times create strong men. But we need those strong men.
Yeah, and that's a great kind of wrapping up point, Riley, is that we're not anti-man in all of this. We are actually very, very pro-men, pro-masculinity. You know, I believe, and this is revealed through the male body, that the height of masculinity is sacrifice. The yes. opposite of that is domination, as we're seeing played out in weak men. Yes. But if I know we have some male listeners as well, and women, you know, please encourage the men in your life to be living that spirit of sacrifice as you're living, you know, your spirit of courage, your own unique femininity in your own unique way. Riley, as we wrap up, I have a lot of women who want to do something. Any besides what you just mentioned, any just practical advice of how women can join this fight with you?
Absolutely. First and foremost, I think it's crucial to know where your state stands. We've talked a lot about legislature and different things there. Ultimately, legislature is a way that this can be handled. In 22 states thus far, they have passed some sort of fairness in women's sports bill that would prevent men from competing on women's teams anywhere from kindergarten through college, which is great. But of course, we need more states. And so knowing where your state stands, contacting your state legislator, your state senator, really, really important. They need to know how their constituents feel about this stuff, especially someone who would be directly impacted by this. Really important. I post on Twitter most frequently, and my Twitter is Riley_Gaines_. And I always try to post breaking stories surrounding this topic. So often people believe the lie, the narrative, that this is a non-issue. It's not really happening. Again, that couldn't be further from the truth. And so I think just, and I hate saying stay educated because it does make me sound like an activist, but staying educated on the topic is really important because you realize just how many people are being affected by this and just how many people, when you stand firm and are bold and saying that men and women are different, which I can't believe requires courage to say, you're not alone. And so many others are affected by that. And so again, that Twitter is Riley_Gaines_. And lastly, just being willing to have conversations surrounding this. What we see so often is people shy away from the topic altogether. Not just in sports, but it's happening in academia, in large corporations, and even the medical profession. So many people don't want to talk about this at all, but we have to be willing to talk about it, have these conversations, and of course, do it in a way that's compassionate, do it in a way that's respectful, because I, in my heart, I know I don't have hatred towards anyone. I'm doing this out of love, not just love for myself and for women, but love for these trans-identifying individuals as well. It doesn't benefit anyone to lie to them, and by acknowledging them as a woman, competing with women, saying they can maintain the same womanhood and femininity that we as women have, that's a lie and that's not good for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, as we wrap up, Riley, thank you so much just for your courage and speaking in truth, but with such conviction, but such grace. It's so feminine. I mean, you are feminine and just in who you are, but how you've gone about this whole thing, how you've stood up in truth, but in love. Thank you for just being such a role model for so many women. Please know that myself, my team, our listeners, we're going to continue to really pray for you, pray for your courage. And if there's ever anything that we can do for you, please let us know.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it.
Great. Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening in. Please go ahead and give Riley a follow on Twitter. We'll put that in the show notes. Please continue to pray for her. Please continue to pray for this issue and have the courage to join us and stand up for what's right. If you are a new listener, we hope that you enjoyed this episode, and we invite you to check out our other episodes as well as follow us on social media at Fierce Athlete or check out our website at fierce.org. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for all of your support and generosity. At Fierce, we are continuing to step up our game and fight for women in sport on this issue and other issues, but we can't do it without you. Please consider joining our monthly Fierce Athlete support team so that we can continue this mission. You can find out more information on our website, fierce.org. Until next time, everybody, God bless you and know of our prayers for you.
Play fierce.
Pray fierce.
Live fierce.